I'm going to introduce our guest speaker today, and I'm going to ask him in a few minutes to tell us a little bit about his history of getting into this whole speaking business and as a speaker. Before I do that, I just want to let you know that you're all muted on the call as it stands right now, and it's great. I'm looking online here, and I can actually see people coming on every minute now, which is great. You're all muted. What I'm going to do after we get into the call for a few minutes is I'm going to give you the opportunity to ask some questions. And the way you will do that is with 5-star on your telephone. So very simple, you just hit 5-star. And when I see that happening, I will, if we have time at that time, I will unmute you, and then we'll have a chance to have a little Q&A. And we'll make sure that we offer as much of that as possible as we go through the call. Okay. Well, listen, it's my honor, and I'm really excited to be introducing to you Martin Perlmutter. And Martin is the co-founder and the president of Speaker Spotlight. And this is a guy that really knows how to make stuff happen. He started out in his career as a lawyer working for some huge organizations like Alt Foods, which is Canada's largest dairy, Four Seasons Hotels, the world's largest luxury hotel chain. And then he moved into creating this business called Speaker Spotlight, which now, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the hottest speaker bureaus companies in Canada, if not in North America. He's been reported in various television and print media. He's been published in over 60 countries. And Martin's opinions are also featured prominently in the first Canadian edition of the Contemporary Business Communication, a College and University textbook, which has been published by Houghton Mifflin here in Mifflin in Canada. So, Martin, it's great to have you on board. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Hugh. Great to be here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to, start off by getting people a little bit more familiar with you and your company. And I thought we could just start by, how did you get into this crazy business 16 years ago? Like, what is it that was your intention, Martin?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and I know we only have an hour for everything, so I'll try to make it really short. But basically, I was practicing law. I had finished law school and was sort of starting my career as a lawyer, and my wife, Farah, was working in marketing and advertising and stumbled across this field. Actually, her uncle was doing a little bit of speaking and wanted her to help him market his seminars and his workshops, and so we sort of stumbled upon this, and we were sort of young and naive enough, I guess, to think we could actually start a business together and work together. We were 25 at the time, so we actually waited until we got married. We got married in Winnipeg, and Farah's parents thought that their daughter was marrying this somewhat successful lawyer from Toronto, and so we decided we'll wait till after the wedding so that we don't give them all a heart attack there in Winnipeg. And then pretty much as soon as we got back and went on our honeymoon, came back and we quit our jobs and went from having two pretty decent incomes to zero and started working out of a spare bedroom in our apartment and just got going and started learning as much as we could about the speaking world, the meetings and conference world, and try to do things a little bit differently than what were being done at the time.
Mm. Yeah, tell me about that. So, I remember that 16 years ago, there were some, and some of them are still with us, pretty big players in the bureau industry. There's NSB and others. And I'm just wondering, what did you and Farah think was going to be, your edge, if you will? Like, what was going to be sort of the distinction that you were going to bring into the industry?
Yeah, I'd love to say that we had a very specific idea of what that would be. But the reality was we were just learning the business and trying to get to understand how different agencies function and so forth. We felt that we could do a better job marketing than maybe some of the bureaus or agencies were at the time. With Farah's background in marketing and PR, that was sort of a natural edge that we might have, so we thought we would do that. And just because neither of us had worked in the industry before, we didn't have any preconceived ideas or notions of how to build a business like this. And so we really tried a lot of different things, and we made a lot of really silly mistakes and some things that worked well, and we just tried to eliminate the mistakes and focus on the things that were working and just do things a little bit better and a little bit differently. So for example, we were lucky in terms of timing because when we started in 1996, the internet was just becoming sort of mainstream, and so we immediately got a website and started using our online presence quite a bit. And I think if we had to take our business from just sort of, you know, brochures and phone and so forth, and then take it online. It might have taken us longer to realize what an opportunity there was with the web. But because we sort of started right at that point, we started adopting new technologies, I think, probably quicker than maybe some of the others, and that gave us a little bit of an edge there.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, I can just imagine, you know, there you are, you're kind of exploring not only a new industry, but also, you know, a huge new technology. And there's no question that your website is pretty amazing. I mean, it's clean, it's comprehensive, it's easy to navigate. And I think that, it definitely can give you an edge, but even a great website isn't going to do it for you. I mean, there must be. I guess I'm just wondering. You know, is there a certain culture maybe that you've tried to create within your company that once people get past the website and they actually get you on the phone, right? That they they start to feel like, okay, there's a distinction there as well. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's our goal. I mean, the website, it's great to have a website, but we want people to pick up the phone and call us and engage, you know, one on one with people. So that's, you know, that's ultimately our goal. So yeah, I think that when we looked at, you know, the different agencies out there, it seemed like some had a very strong focus on just on the speakers, and sort of they viewed their client as the speaker and so forth, and it seemed like some were, you know, viewed it much more that the meeting planner was their client. And we really saw that it's in order for us to be successful, we got to build strong relationships with both the speakers and the event planners, the conference organizers who are hiring them. So we really focused all of our energy on just starting to develop strong relationships, with both the talent and the people hiring them. And I think that was important. To me it seemed fairly obvious, but I think that it seemed that there was an approach maybe that it had to be one or the other for some reason. The other thing is, as I mentioned, sort of trying new things. I mean, a lot of it at the beginning was just trying to get our foot in the door. That was the hardest part. You know, we really believed, you know, we had done some research. We had a small group of speakers we were working with. We knew them well. We knew what they could do, what they couldn't do. And so we really felt that if given the opportunity, we were going to provide great service. But the hardest thing is to get a client to switch. If they've been using a particular company for the past number of years, and even if things haven't been amazing and they haven't, you know, got a standing ovation from their speaker every year, but as long as, you know, there were didn't have any bad experiences, it's hard to get somebody to switch and take a chance on a company that they're not familiar with. You know, again, we were new to the industry, so when we'd call people, it was difficult when you'd say, you know, I'm calling from Speaker Spotlight. They didn't know who Speaker Spotlight was. You know, they'd say, what's your name again? I'd say, Martin. They didn't know who I was. It's not like I'd been around in the industry and they knew me from somewhere else. We had a small number of 18 speakers, many of whom were not, all of whom really were not household names. We didn't have any big celebrities or anyone that we could say, well, we represent, you know, this person or that person. A lot of the speakers, you know, they were very good speakers, but were, you know, not necessarily names that people would immediately recognize. So it was actually, you know, the first, especially the first year or two, was just really trying to get our foot in the door. I was probably making myself about 75 or so cold calls a day probably for the first year, and just try to get the opportunity. We knew that if we had the opportunity, we would provide great service. You know, we'd really try to understand the needs of the clients, recommend the best speakers, and then really provide, you know, great service and the follow-through to make sure that everything went as smoothly as possible.
Well, 75 cold calls a day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
fun.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness. You know, one of the things... one of the things, Martin, that I think it's there's this idea out there that event planners are these professional people that have a title called event planner, and they either work independently or they work within the company. And for sure, my experience is that in the big corporations, they actually have someone that might be some kind of communication or planner type role within the HR department probably. But I also find that for the most part, the people I end up working with as a speaker, the people that actually select me, they're doing this off the edge of their desk. Like, this is a part-time role that maybe some VP gave them for this one, you know, annual event or something. So I guess what I'm getting at is that I think relationships are really important here, because these aren't always professional people that are planners that know how, you know, they know how to do the business, right? They, for a lot of them, that maybe even their first time. Is that what you're finding as well?
Yeah, there definitely is that. I mean, it's, sometimes we're dealing with very seasoned planners who've been doing this longer than we have, and they know very specifically what they want. And other times, yeah, it's somebody who either volunteers or gets thrown into something involuntarily and all of a sudden ends up, you know, having this task to plan a meeting or hire a speaker for an event. And, my theory is that when someone hires a speaker, their biggest goal is not to screw up. And in other words, I think if you gave someone a choice between, okay, this speaker's either going to get a 10 out of 10 standing ovation or they might really fall short and miss the mark versus someone who's going to get a 7 out of 10, it's going to be safe. They're never going to wow anybody, but they're never going to say anything that, is going to come back to haunt anyone or, I think most people will go for the safe pick. They just don't want to mess up. They don't want to be the person who, is responsible for hiring that speaker who bombed or what have you. So, I think that sometimes they operate from a little bit of that position of not wanting to make a mistake. And that's not a great position to be in. And so we really want to just try to help people, take the risk out of it and provide them with all the information and tools that they need to make a really, informed choice that, hopefully, isn't just a safe choice, but is actually going to exceed their expectations. And I think that, when you're dealing with people who aren't that experienced in planning events, often that's what we hear is they just don't want to be the ones who mess up. So, there's definitely an education process in trying to help them, understand, what the options may be out there and help them make a good decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my impression, my experience has been actually is that you can bring a lot of resources to the game. That there's this notion out there in the speaker world, the bureaus don't need you till you don't need them, mm-hmm. And I think that the reality is that bureaus actually, my experience is they actually do a better job sometimes than a lot of us do because. They have better systems and they have more staff to do some of the pre and post work. They have. They're available probably more than speakers, and I think that not only can you help take the risk out of it for the event planner, right? But I think that also it seems like the bureaus like yours, they also really are a great ally for the speaker, even when the speaker has a mature business and is doing very well. Thank you very much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, I think that, I always, when I talk to speakers who are looking at, who don't currently work with a bureau and they're thinking about it, my starting point is always that, that it's not for everybody and not every speaker, needs to or should have representation. And so that's, I think, the first one is to look at, what a bureau might be able to do, that they can't do on their own and so forth. But, I think that there's definitely some valuable things and it depends. I think it's really important as a bureau, I know that we really look carefully, we get approached by, easily 1,000 speakers a year looking for representation. And, we end up taking on probably, less than 1% of those. So we need to be very selective. We need to make sure we know the speaker, know who they are, know what they do, understand, again, the kinds of audiences they would work well with and the kinds of audiences they might not work so well with. And I think, by the same token, I think speakers should be really selective in terms of the agencies or bureaus that they work with. And, because there's, there can be real benefits to being with the bureau or an agency, and there can also be, quite the opposite. It could be detrimental to be with an agency that doesn't have your best interests in mind or that doesn't really understand what you do and could end up putting you in a situation, in front of a group that you're not ideally suited to speak to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that actually is one of the fears. And I want to come back to that, Martin. I want to come back to in a few minutes to, well, what should a speaker be doing to be bureau friendly, if you will. But I wanted to just find out a little bit more about, so what's now been the evolution of Speaker Spotlight? So it's been 16 years.
Yeah.
Obviously tried lots of stuff. So, what is your... what is your focus now? I mean, I'm sure we can all just assume, oh, it's okay, speakers, the highest fee possible and the biggest event possible. But, really, what is your strategy now?
Yeah, well, from day one, it was always about building strong relationships. And that was our believe from day one is that if we, you know, if we build our business on a foundation of strong relationships, then our business will be successful. And if we don't have strong relationships both with the speakers and the meeting planners, then we're going to obviously have a problem. So in that sense, nothing has changed. I mean, and in fact, even more so now, I think the strength of relationships matter more than ever before for a variety of reasons that we could talk about, but, some of the technology that exists now and social media being one of them that, when we started, many speakers, bureaus, or agencies were gatekeepers. And it was, if you wanted to hire somebody, unless you happened to know who they were personally and you had their phone number or their business card, then you had to go through an agency. And now almost everybody is perfectly accessible. So, definitely relationships. But, from the beginning, we really, when we were starting out, it was primarily, keynote speakers. And then we got a little bit more into some, corporate entertainment as well. But, one thing that we've always wanted to make sure is that we don't want to be seen as the people you call if you have an hour slot to fill at a conference or at an event. So we don't want to be – that's not what we stand for, really, or that's not what we think that we do best. So, obviously sometimes that's what it is. It's an hour at a conference. But, we really we really look at our business through the impact that we can have, and we really believe we can make a positive impact in people's lives through – the speakers that we represent, the people that we represent, but not just keynotes. So keynotes is definitely our core business, and that's a big, big part of it. But also, we have a learning and development division that gets further, deeper into organizations. So, sometimes it'll start with a keynote, and then it can end up becoming training and other forms of learning. So there's that element as well. And then the third is we have what we call our celebrity division, which is endorsements and media campaigns and so forth. So, we have sort of those three areas. Now, our core business is and probably always will be the keynotes, and that's what we focus a lot of our resources, our time and energy and creativity on. But, we really see it that we want to be able to make a positive impact on our clients' lives, on the people in the audiences that our speakers get in front of. And sometimes that might mean at a conference, and sometimes that might mean through a training, and sometimes that might mean through the media.
Nice. So really, with the learning development division, I guess, and the celebrity, and I saw on your website the whole celebrity page, which looks great. So that's a whole, I guess, growing part of your business.
Yeah, it allows us to be a little bit more of a more valuable partner to our clients. So again, we the conference business is our bread and butter, but there's other ways that we can help. At the end of the day, I think the expertise that we've developed is how to match talent with organizations. That's what we do every day. And so, whether that again is at a conference or it's through training and development, or sometimes on a marketing initiative where they need a media spokesperson or an individual to endorse a particular cause or product. It might be through that channel as well.
Nice. Okay, so let's go to what I think probably some of the callers want to know about, and then I'm going to open it up to some Q&A. And that is, so you mentioned 1,000, speakers or 1,000 inquiries a year, and you take like 1%. What are you looking for? So, is a bureau like yours? It's already established and successful. You've got offices across Canada. I mean, Martin, are you looking for more talent? And if you are, then what is it that you're looking for?
Well, we're always looking. You always want to be able to try to spot, the next sort of up-and-comer before everybody else does, and that's a very important thing for us. And I think, when we evaluate it, we have a little process here where on a weekly basis we sit down and have a meeting. We talk about a few different things, and one of them is if anybody has come across anyone that's of interest, they pitch into the rest of the group. And what we always say is, they have to add something to make our roster better. So sometimes that might mean it's a topic area that we just don't really have covered, or it might be a topic we do have covered, but it's a different perspective on that. So it's a bit of an intangible in that sense, but the reality is there's a lot of speakers out there and a lot of people who do very good work, and we want to be able to, to offer our clients something maybe a little bit different than they would find on their own. And so, for us to be able to find people who, who are, you know, obviously, you know, great speakers, knowledgeable about the subject matter, have the credibility to speak to it. And then I guess the other thing is just that we've, you know, found over time is that the people that we can build a long-term relationship with. And, you know, one thing I've definitely learned is that, you know, when there's a strong alignment of values, it's amazing how well things can work. And when there isn't, it's amazing how difficult things can be. And just a really quick example is, you know, there's a speaker that we work with, and we've always had a great relationship, and we just, you know, are really on the same page. And, you know, a little while ago, we had an opportunity for him, and it was in, I think, November, and he only had a couple dates available in November, and it happened to be one of the dates that were available. Contrast that with there's another speaker who I will definitely keep nameless, who just everything always seemed to be difficult, and you know whether it was, you know didn't seem to matter what it was, and you know, we had an opportunity, and it turned out to be the only day of the month that person was booked was the day that we had the opportunity. So it was just one of those weird things. You can't really explain it, but it just seems, you know, like if there's an alignment of values, and it doesn't mean, you know, politically or whatever, we see the world the same way, but it's really just believing the same things, believing what's important in business and in life, then it seems like things can work, you know, magically. And so that's, you know, that's something that's important to us. And we put our values out there very clearly, and, you know, we put it on our website, and we're, you know, we're proud of the things that we stand for and we believe in. And some people it really resonates with, and they immediately know that, hey, this is a company that they want to work with. And other people, they don't, it doesn't, and that's okay. Like, you know, we're not trying to be everything for everyone.
Nice. So maybe I actually have one more kind of question area I think we could tackle, and that might be perfect fodder for the phone calls. And that is, so if you were to kind of divide it up very simply, you know, good to do, bad to do. So let's talk about, you're now representing a speaker, and you know, you've made a commitment, and speakers made commitments. So now we're at the event. So, you know, you've seen it, Martin. So, like, what is it that, let's start with the good side. So speakers should definitely do to keep that event planner, whether they're pro or it's off the side of their desk, but what do they need to do to kind of reduce fear and anxiety and also hopefully make that event planner happy?
Well, I think, you know, the communication well in advance is so important, and you know, having those calls or meetings, you know, in advance to make sure everybody's on the same page and you know, it is really important. You know, the first time, obviously, the speaker meets the planner shouldn't be at the event. You know, they should at least meet by phone beforehand, if not in person. So I think, you know, there's a lot of things that can be done well in advance of the event to just, you know, start, you know, building a relationship and so forth. You know, obviously arriving early is so important that it seems obvious, but, you know, there's few things that could be more stressful for a planner than, you know, looking at their watch, wondering if the speaker's going to show up or not. So, you know, as a rule of thumb, I always tell people to try to arrive at least an hour earlier, if not more so. If you can sit in on other sessions or be a part of the event, that's, you know, that's a fantastic thing to do. It's not always possible, but I know that planners obviously appreciate when they know the speaker's there, they know they've tested their equipment and they're on site and so forth. You know, the ability to listen is obviously, you know, as important, if not more important, than the ability to speak. So, you know, really understanding. I think one of the challenges sometimes for a speaker is, you know, you've got a few different clients. You know, you've got the meeting planner. You've got maybe a senior executive at the organization or group that's briefed them on what's important. Then you actually have the audience themselves who are sitting there listening to the speech. And you know, you have to sort of try to keep everybody happy in a sense. But that's sometimes just conflicting goals, and that can be challenging. You know, when the executive team is telling the speaker one thing, but it's not something the audience necessarily wants to hear. So the ability to take into account the different, you know, considerations is key, and deliver a message that's obviously timely and relevant for the event. And I think that those are the things that can make for a successful engagement.
Yeah, and I like that. We're going to get the not good to do, but I think that's such a good point you just made in terms of multiple, there's kind of like multiple audiences that you always have. You know, mm-hmm. I think that it's easy for us to put our attention on the audience, that, you know, mm-hmm. the ones in the seats, but the reality is, yeah, there's the one that maybe was the event planner, but they may not actually be the ultimate decision maker. It's, you know, it's the VP or the manager that was actually directing that use of the budget or directing overall. There's that going on. And, mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's important that we're careful who we listen to, because it's easy also to be influenced by them, you know. And I had a situation last week. I was giving a presentation, and in one of the breaks, the senior vice president came up and said, well, what about meetings? You know, can you include meetings? Well, you know, it wasn't a part of our plan. It wasn't a part of my curriculum. It wasn't what they had approved, but that's the senior VP, and he was involved with the plan. So I did 20 minutes on meetings, you know, because that guy needed to hear about meetings. And
absolutely.
Right? And so, whereas if it had been someone else that wasn't involved with the overall agenda, then I probably would have to say, that's a great thing, and here's what I'll do is, you know, I'll put it together, a white paper on that for you, or I'll, you know, but I'm not going to create 20 minutes out of my... Mm-hmm. So I think that's a really important point, is there's multiple audiences, and we need to make sure that it's not just about those guys. You know, and I think a good example also is, you know, when you don't, like, phone and let them know that you've just arrived. So, yeah, you did a great job on the stage, perhaps, hopefully, but you created a lot of anxiety for that person that was at the, you know, the gala the night before and wondering, well, where are you, and that sort of stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just to that point, I mean, here, you know, an example of what could go wrong is we once had a speaker at an event, and they did their talk, and the audience loved them. The audience thought that they were amazing, and the speaker felt that the engagement went very well because they got, I think, a standing ovation from the audience. When we spoke with the client afterwards, they were not happy, and essentially, you know, there had been a pre-call and meeting to discuss the objectives, and the speaker was supposed to cover a number of things, and they unfortunately didn't do that. And the problem was that the executive was speaking immediately after the speaker, and a lot of their comments were tied to what the speaker was supposed to cover. And so, you know, the audience might have loved them, but the client was actually quite unhappy and felt that the objectives weren't met at all. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you want the audience to like you and so forth, but you need to deliver the message that is agreed upon, and that's key. And then, you know, the point you bring up here is really interesting, is sometimes, you know, at the last moment, you know, you can be told all of a sudden, well, you know, your time gets cut, or can you cover this? And it can be really challenging to try to change things up on the fly. And then if things don't go as planned, you know, it could end up, you know, coming back to you. So it's tricky, you know, when you're trying to juggle these things. I guess the only other thing I would say about the sort of do's and don'ts in terms of the actual on-site at the event is, you know, I've heard, and there's speakers who have reputations for doing this, unfortunately, of treating the executives at the company really well, but not treating other people as well. And so, you know, so there's nothing that, you know, can drive a meeting planner more crazy, as, you know, the speaker's wonderful and polite and charming with when the executive's around, and as soon as they're gone, they're not so nice to the team that's there executing the meeting and the AV people and so forth. And, you know, and that can really work against them. I mean, to me, it's just common, you know, good, you know, being, you know, sort of good manners and courtesy and so forth. But, you know, there's speakers who get reputations of not being very nice to deal with. And, you know, one of the best ways a meeting planner can get revenge, I think, is by not hiring them or by telling their colleagues that, you know what, this person's, you know, they're, you know, a little bit full of themselves. So I think, you know, a good dose of humility goes a long way in everything. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think building on that, you know, another thing that I always encourage speakers to think about is, well, first of all, you know, get to know the AV people and absolutely get to know the event planner, whoever's involved, her whole team, his whole team. But get to know the AV people, shake their hand, write down their name, use their name, and, you know, you might not only get better service, but you might get, like, things. A number of times I've gotten, like, a free video as a result. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy happily has, you know, created a CD for me, DVD.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and it's such a simple thing, but to me it's made a profound difference, is always figure out the breaks. Don't, you know, the event planner may love you and be super happy that you're there, but the reality is, if you went beyond 10:15, it blows the whole rest of the day. And so,
absolutely,
you know, figure out, it's so simple, right? You think, well, oh, no, I flew here, and I'm the star, and they can't wait to hear my gems, and I had 60 minutes planned, and I don't care that minister went over by 15 minutes. I'm going to give them my 60 minutes. And that's absolutely wrong, because that's, in the world of event planning, of course, that's not what they're looking for.
Yeah, being on time is huge, absolutely. And if your time is cut at the beginning, I think it's great to just clarify what time they want you to wrap up. Because I have seen situations where the client says, no, you know what, we're fine, we don't have anything after. You can do your whole hour even though we're starting 10 or 15 minutes late. And at the other times where they say, no, we've got to get out of this room or we've got to get people to another session. So, I agree. I mean, those are it's challenging and it puts the speaker in a difficult situation. But I think you said this, and I agree, is that at the end of the day, my view is that, the speaker's not there for themselves. They're there for the meeting planner, for the people in the audience, and they're there to serve them. And I think that that it's so important to make sure that that's keep that in mind and do the best that you can to
well,
do so.
If you may have the best gems in the world, but if they've been sitting there for 2 hours, mm-hmm. They've been there through all the opening speeches and all the VPs, So let's build on this just a little bit more. And I will open the phone lines in just a minute, but I do want to get to this bad to do thing. Is that you gave us one great example there, a couple of examples where the speaker wasn't available and the other one was where the speaker didn't follow their objectives. But when we set up this call, you also talked about some examples where, at least you had one example there where speakers that go into the promotion a little too hard. Mm. So, tell us about that kind of faux pas.
Yeah, well, I think that a huge pet peeve I know for me, and I think for lots of event planners, is you never want someone selling from the stage, right? And so, there's when we started, I remember hearing tapes of that were, I think, created at NSA about how, 50% of your income should come from back of room sales and things like that. And I don't know if that's still, something that people say, but, I think, if a speaker goes into an event, and one of their objectives is to sell product, I think it's a recipe for disaster. If they're there and they're being paid there to speak, I think the best way to sell product is to do a great job, and then people will line up and want to buy your book or whatever you may have. But example I think I talked to you about when we chatted a few weeks ago was we had a speaker at an event, and he had a 60-minute keynote he was delivering, and 55 minutes into it, it could not have been going any better. It was just building up to a crescendo where you could just feel the standing ovation about to happen. And in the last 5 minutes, for some reason, he decided to end off by doing a little bit of an infomercial for the books and so forth that he had. And it just sucked the wind out of the room. And it was a shame because, unfortunately, there was opportunities for more work with the client. And in the day, they decided not to bring the person back. And that was the reason. So, again, I think, it may be different I'm speaking specifically about the Canadian market now. It might be different in the U.S. Maybe that's more acceptable, but I find that, if you have product you want to sell, the best thing is to have a person thanking you to mention it to the audience. Mm-hmm. If that's something they're comfortable doing, as opposed to, I don't think someone should spend even a minute of their allotted time doing that because that's not why they're there.
Interesting. That's an interesting perspective. I've certainly seen it done both ways. And to me, it's always fascinating to sit in the audience. I'm like, for example, I might be up next and I'm watching the speaker in front of me and I'm thinking, wow, that was interesting. Like sometimes it's very smooth and they just roll it right into it. And sometimes it is kind of a bit overt. It's a bit pushy. And I always wonder, well, is it just me that's having this reaction, or is everybody feeling a bit pushed, to go out there? So it's interesting to hear your perspective that you actually think you should not sell. You should find a way to let them know, I guess, but not as you say, not even spend a minute of your time from the stage doing that, right?
That's my view. I mean, and then maybe people disagree, and that's fine, but that's my view is that, if someone's being paid to speak, they're being paid to deliver, hopefully relevant content and inspiration and energy and whatever else, it is that they bring. But, I just think I don't think it's right to spend time trying to sell a product. I think it's just not the right time and place.
What about after, Martin? Like, I know that, SPK Spotlight, that you have your own sort of protocol, right, for after an event as far as, follow-up and gifts and things like that. I'm just wondering, what do you expect a speaker to do, or what would you recommend speakers do? They've had great success, whether they got a standing ovation or not, right? But everybody's happy. They're on the flight home. What would you recommend, whether they're with a bureau or not? Like, what do you think is a good thing that helps out to kind of, you know, just let the event planner know that you're still thinking about them and also maybe get some future work.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think a follow-up call is always a great thing, and we always, you know, we do it, you know, as a matter of routine after every event and try to, you know, get a sense of how things went. We don't typically send out feedback forms just because I find that often at events there already are feedback forms, and so we don't want to add to the workload that the meeting planner has. But, you know, we just follow up with a phone call. We send thank you note as well. And at one time we sent gifts, but now we just do a donation instead to one of the causes that we support. So we found that people, I think, really appreciated that and didn't necessarily need a, you know, another, I don't know, mug or something like that. So we would just we do a donation, a charitable donation, as part of our thank you. You know, feedback is always helpful, and I think you know, we always again try to solicit feedback. So if there are evaluations that are done as part of the event, we try to get summaries of those. But I think a follow up is a great thing. You know, I think it shows that you're obviously thinking about them and that their opinion matters to you. And you know, and sometimes it can lead to more work as well, which is fantastic. So I think it's, you know, I don't like to sort of ask for more business at that point, because I feel that it's, you know, my only purpose really in following up is to get honest feedback. It's not to to then try to find out who else we could contact. So I tend to leave that for a later time.
Yeah, nice. No, that's good. That's good. You know, and I know I'm guilty. I don't, you know, sometimes you get so busy, right? But I do think that touch base, I think that, especially in the age that we're in, I just think that one more phone call is always good, right? You know, it's so easy to send an email saying, wow, thanks. And I think that phone call, even if you don't necessarily always connect, that you weren't able to actually, at least you made the effort, right, to say, I'm reaching out, I'm interested to know, I really, really value you as a, you know, as a partner, a client, and let's try and connect.
Yeah, I know one speaker who always actually calls literally as they're driving away from the event or, you know, in the cab, and they know they're going to get voicemail, but they just do it as a matter of course so that when the person gets back to work, they're going to have that message there. And it literally, you know, it takes literally no time, because if you're in a taxi or something anyway, you know, it doesn't take any time. And then, you know, it's just a way of, you know, of saying thanks. And, I think it's a great idea.
I'm sitting in the cab. I'm looking at the mug he gave me. Okay, let's open the lines here. So we got about 40 people on the call, which is great. And in addition, of course, we get loads of people going in and listening to these recordings afterwards, which I think is wonderful. So again, if you're on the call, it's 5-star on your telephone. You can ask Martin a question. We've got about 19 minutes left. And I will see if this system works. So if you hit 5-star, I should be able to see it on my screen, actually, and then I can unmute you. So you better do it, otherwise Martin and I'll be talking about kids.
Tell you about my summer vacation. Okay.
My summer vacation. My new iPad. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so I'm gonna and unfortunately I don't know who this is that's calling, because I only get it as a phone number. But here, I'm gonna unmute someone. We're gonna see how this works. Here we go. All right. So there's someone unmuted. Can you give us your name and ask your question, please? Go ahead. Okay, well, that didn't work. I did punch someone. So again, if you're on the call and you want to get unmuted, you have to hit 5-star on the telephone, and then I will unmute you. But I don't see. Oh, here's one another. Here we go. Let's try again. Okay, if you can hear me, and I just unmuted you, and you put up your hand, if you can just say your name and ask the question to Martin, please. Yeah, go ahead.
Are you clicking on the speaker or the question?
It's the speaker. There you go. Sorry. Let's try that again. I'm sorry about that.
Okay, no problem. My name is Bill Dennis. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, Bill. Can you hear you, Bill? Yeah.
Okay, great. And I would love to work with Speaker Spotlight. Where my current situation is that I put together a presentation I've done 3 years of research on the topic, and I've, for the last year, been making presentations specifically the 5 major organizations, and my presentation went over pretty well. But I'm under the impression that I have to do a video before Speaker Spotlight would consider me, or is the testimonial letters enough? Because Martin mentioned that sometimes you have people come in and present to you, at Speaker Spotlight, and I'd love to have that opportunity. I just don't happen to have a video yet.
Yeah, it's difficult without, you know, either video or being able to go see the speaker in person because, you know, I mean, sometimes someone, you know, looks great on paper and you know, but we need to see them. So, you know, so what I would suggest is you know, to try to line up a talk, even if there's no fee involved, where someone will videotape it, you know, because it is very difficult. We don't typically have people come in and sort of present to us, you know, or meet with us before someone has gone out and seen them, or at least seen a video clip. You know, I sort of equate it to, you know, a literary agent where someone wants them to represent them for a book. They need to provide a writing sample at least before the literary agency could determine if there was a fit. So I think that, you know, if you can get a, you know, find a group to speak to, even if there, you know, there is no fee, but just where there's an opportunity for it to be videotaped, you know, in front of an audience, that would be ideal. And, you know, the other thing I guess I would say is that, you know, it's probably worth to wait till you have that because, you know, there's a saying about, you know, only one chance to make a first impression. And you know, I've gone and seen speakers where, they probably weren't quite ready yet. And so they were very anxious because they wanted to get, you know, start working with bureaus and you go and it wasn't the best talk. And I mean, I believe in second chances and I'd always go back and see someone again or, you know, if we felt there was an opportunity. But, you know, I think it's important to just make sure you really have something that stands out before you do that.
Great. Well, I'm looking to do that. I have an organization that's agreed to me videoing one of my presentation. Now, my question is, who do I send it to at Speaker Spotlight?
You can send it to me, or you can send it to Sarah here. So, if it's an email, my email is Martin martin@speakers.ca. You can send it to me, but again, it's we do have a little sort of committee, so it's not, you know, we have a bit of a process to evaluate these things. But you know, I'm happy if you send it to me. I'll make sure that
great.
Yeah, it goes through the channels.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for that question.
Right. Okay, I'll do that. Thank you for your help.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
I'm going to unmute someone whose phone number ends with 0400.
Yes, I'm not sure if you're talking about me, but PJ Wade here, the Catalyst. And thank you, Martin, for taking the time to talk to us in your candor. I was interested in the proposal end of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a futurist and a specialist in the boomers and their multi-generational families, for instance, and I would like to approach conferences where I can see they're doing the same old thing every year just with different titles, and I'd like to put a proposal together, but what would that look like? How would I, does it need to be very lengthy, or would I do it verbally, or to get them to see that there's something
great question.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's interesting. You know, there was a time when we sent out packages, and you know, we had FedEx coming to our office every day, multiple times a day, and sending out tapes and you know, promotional packages. So much of what we do now is just is electronically. We send you know, information. You know, whether it's a PDF, you know, or just, you know, a cut and paste a bio type of thing, just to you know, hopefully pique someone's interest. So, you know, I don't think it needs to be that extravagant, but I think, you know, my theory is always it's good to, you know, send some information and then follow it up with a phone call. You know, I think if you just send it out, you know, it can get lost. You know, people get so much email, so much mail that you know, they may not receive it or remember receiving it. So, you know, I think, and I think just thinking about, you know, the question I think to always keep in mind is about differentiation. You know, if you know they've had speakers or futurists or whatever in the past, and you feel that you have something different to offer, I think that's what you should, is a great thing to lead with is, you know, here, you know, I know you've had such and such or these people in the past, and this is what I do, and this is how I'm different and why I think, you know, I'd be a good speaker for your next event. So I think always thinking about how you differentiate yourself is just such a key, you know, factor to keep in mind when you're pitching. Because again, I mean, these people, you know, planning conferences are getting, you know, in some cases inundated with speakers' bureaus. You know, they're getting all kinds of information sent to them, and it's just a matter sometimes of just keeping it all straight. So anything you can do to stand out, I think, is incredibly helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks, PJ. Yeah, I love the advice. I think it's from Dan Kennedy, of all people. I think he says something like, you need to figure out what conversation is going on in your client's mind and then become a part of it.
That's
also,
great.
What are they already thinking about, and then become aware of that? Okay, I'm going to unmute someone here. I don't have a phone number, so if you've got, you put your hand up if you can just maybe start talking, and we'll see if it's you. So someone put up their hand. I don't have a phone number, but if you've got a question, if you could just say your name, please, and then ask a question to Martin. Nope. Okay, I'm going to unmute someone else on my little control panel here. And here we go. So this person, their number ends with 8099.
Hi, Hugh. It's Linda calling.
Hey, Linda. Good to have you
Hi,
on board.
Hey, Linda. How are you?
Good. Very good. Thank you. This is a great, it's just great to hear both of you guys' voices. So, you know, I've enjoyed, as you have, Hugh, a great relationship with speakers over the years, and appreciate that. But as a person who's been at this for a long time, I don't know if there's anybody else on the call who has thinks like me, but Martin, in your opinion, how often should someone who's been at this a while sort of maybe reinvent or refresh or to keep you, the Bureau, still interested in our material?
That's a great question. You know, I think sometimes we'll get calls from speakers and they'll want to know, you know, what are the hot topics, or they want to rebrand themselves and so forth. And I always think that, it, you know, that's not necessarily the best way to look at it. And that, you know, you obviously have your areas of expertise, the things that you do really well. And so I think that, you know, obviously staying with that, you know, is critical, but, you know, there's no doubt that there's ways to kind of refresh it and repackage it a little bit. You know, I think that, you know, from our point of view, the most helpful thing is just to hear updates on, you know, recent successes that you've had. So, you know, if we have a speaker and it seems like, you know, every couple of years they're, you know, they're changing their area of expertise, it sort of, it makes it feel like they're not really that passionate about what they do, or that, you know, they're questioning, you know, whether the direction is right. But I just think, you know, the best thing is to, you know, to hear about, you know, some of the recent successes you have. Maybe it's a testimonial letter or an email from a client. To just keep us up to date on the things that you're up to and the types of groups you're speaking to and the type of feedback that you're getting. I think that's the most helpful thing. You know, sometimes, as I said, you know, there are speakers who it seems like every year they have a whole new batch of topics, and it gets confusing, to be honest, to try to remember, sometimes keep it straight and so forth. And so I think that, you know, people who are consistently doing good work over time, you know, don't necessarily change it up that much, but are always updating it and making sure it's, you know, it's current and relevant. And then, you know, just keeping us abreast of their activities is really helpful. And there's, you know, that's probably the most helpful thing, is just to hear what you've been up to, you know, what types of groups you're speaking to, and you know, and again, feedback, like, you know, it's social proof, right, of your success. So
okay. Thanks.
That's nice. Yeah, great. Thanks, Linda. So for those of you that didn't recognize that voice, that's, of course, Linda Edgecombe. And what's funny is that we're like maybe 3 miles from each other.
From each other.
Hilarious. Thanks, Linda. Good to hear your voice.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm going to go over to phone number that ends with 1489. If you've got, just say your name and ask the question to Martin, please.
Hi, Hugh. It's Randy Park.
Hey, Randy. How's it going, buddy?
Good, thanks. Hi, Martin.
Hey, Randy.
Martin, I speak on systems thinking and dealing with complexity and dealing with reality. And with the current topics that are in the news, things like the financial situation, future of energy, my analysis often leads to conclusions that are either controversial or even bad news. And something that audiences are looking for, or is there a way to present that in that such that they that it's more appealing than just sort of being the Dr. Doom kind of thing?
Great question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, you need to be true to your conclusions, and if you really, you know, I'm definitely not going to tell you to just put a positive spin on everything just for the sake of doing it. But I think if you can offer, you know, some solutions that go along with it, is I guess what I would say. You know, there's a speaker that we work with. His name's Dr. Thomas Homer Dixon, and he wrote a book 12 years ago called The Ingenuity Gap, and in it he was predicting all kinds. He had all sorts of dire warnings about climate crises and terrorism and economic meltdowns and so forth, and everyone called him a doomsayer, and then all of a sudden a lot of the things he talked about started happening, and all of a sudden he became a prophet. And sometimes I joke with him and say, you know, the worse things are in the world, the busier you get. And when things are pretty good, he tends not to be as busy. But I think the key thing with him and you know, what he does really well is he doesn't sugarcoat his findings, his research, but he does offer a solution. So there's some type of hopeful message, because I mean, I would hope that there is. You know, if there's nothing, then we're all in a lot more trouble. So I think that's the key is providing a realistic perspective on things, but also providing some potential solutions that hopefully give people hope that as dire as things may be, that things can always get better.
Okay, great. Thanks, Martin.
Yeah. That's nice. I mean, I think you could make the analogy to the whole environmental movement. I think that it's the difference between, say, an Al Gore presentation, which at least offers some, you know, glimmer of hope and ideas, as opposed to maybe Greenpeace or someone like that, which, you know, a lot of people would just discount because it just seems too much of a doomsday sort of theme to it. So I think that's great advice.
Yeah, it's it's challenging because you need to be realistic and honest in what you believe. But nobody wants to pay someone to come in and depress everybody. I mean, I'm just an eternal optimist, but I always think that there's always some type of solution and there's always something that can be done about a problem. And so I think just being, you know, very focused on that as well is key. So it's, you know, I think of someone like Stephen Lewis, who talks about some of the most catastrophic events that are imaginable, and yet he still leaves his audiences inspired because he provides, you know, he has a deep belief that, you know, the human condition can always be improved and that people have a role to play. And so, you know, he can spend 45 minutes out of a 60-minute talk talking about really depressing things and yet leave people uplifted. So there's always a way, I think, to hopefully, you know, look at some of the, the possibilities that exist.
Nice. Hey, thanks for that, Randy.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it. I'm going to go over to a phone number that ends with 0400. Did you still have a question for Martin? Or did we already get that one?
Yes, it.
Yeah?
PJ Wade from The Catalyst. Martin, I just wanted to ask you a bit about the money side of business with the economy as it is and isn't in North America. What are fees like for speakers?
You know, it varies so widely. It's all over the place. I mean, there's definitely, you know, in the last few years, there's been more downward pressure, I guess. Clients that are looking for, you know, for a deal are looking to negotiate more on the fees. And, you know, we always try to, instead of negotiating down, try to add value, and maybe the speaker can offer, you know, something in addition to what they normally do, you know, at no extra cost, or, you know, to sort of keep the fee where it is but provide more value. The last couple of years, you know, we haven't seen as much of that. It's still definitely a tough market, I think, but the irony of all this is that in the last few years, the average fee per booking that we have has actually gone up. So it seems like, even though, you know, 3 years ago there were definitely clients who were canceling their events or not bringing in outside speakers, it seems like the ones that were really valued what speakers were able to bring and were actually willing to pay more for it in some cases. So that was something that was not expected, So, you know, it's, I'm just a big believer that it's all about value. And if you exceed, you know, people's expectations and you deliver more value than, you know, someone expects or pays for, then it won't be a problem. And, you know, there's many speakers who are, you know, as busy as they've ever been now and have not had to reduce their fees, in some cases increase their fees. And, you know, I think right now it's fine, but, you know, ask me next week and you know, the economy is so volatile, you know, it seems like one bad day on the market and everybody can all of a sudden hit the panic button. And what we do is so dependent on people's expectations. So if someone has an event next April, you know, whether they book a speaker today or not, in some ways depends on whether what they think the state of the world is going to be next April. And when things get shaky, then people start postponing decision making and putting things off and playing the sort of wait and see game, which makes things challenging for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough call, isn't it? Because on one hand, we're all told that, you know, a higher fee creates a perception of value, but at the same time, at the end of the day, someone's going to have to make a decision whether it's going to be you or somebody else. And so it can also mm-hmm. influence your decision, right? Their decision.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, when speakers ask about increasing their fee, you know, I mean, I'm an economics major, and although I don't remember much about economics, I do believe in the law of supply and demand. And, you know, my answer is usually, like, if you're really busy, like if you're turning down, opportunities, or if you're, you know, you're kind of busier than you want to be and you don't feel you have the time to prepare or deliver as well as you'd like to, then that's probably a good sign you should increase your fee. But, you know, I have seen, you know, situations where speakers increase their fee just because they feel that, you know, it's time for a raise, or that person's charging X and I should be making at least that much. And it's a tricky thing, because you never want to go up and then have to go back down. I think it creates a bad, it sends a bad signal out to the market. So the value needs to be there. So sometimes people say, well, what's the minimum fee that you work with for a speaker? And I say, we don't have one. You know, I could go see a speaker and think they're fantastic if their fee is $5,000, but if they told me their fee is $10,000, we wouldn't want to work with them. You know, so it's not that a higher fee is better necessarily. It's what do they deliver, and relative to other people out there who, you know, speak maybe on similar topics or.
And I suppose right, and I suppose also the event that they're best suited for.
Exactly,
so,
and
so
that's, you know, knowing the market.
For, yeah,
yeah. And so everybody's got their own threshold in terms of how busy they want to be and how much time it takes them to prepare, you know, a talk and so forth. And some people are able to speak 3-4 times a week, and others don't want to do more than one talk a week because they spend a lot more time, you know, tailoring it and preparing. So I think it really depends on the individual.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks, PJ. That's a whole seminar in itself right there. Fees.
Yeah.
That's a great one to bring up. Thanks a lot. We've got about like maybe 2 minutes left, and I've sort of lost track with this system I'm using. It gives me a phone number but no name, so I'm going to unmute one person. Randy, was this you again, Randy Park?
Yeah, that's me.
1489. Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. And it gives me a little balloon to say someone's put their hand up, but it doesn't tell me whether or not I've actually unmuted them or not. I've got one more person here that has their hand up. But I don't have a phone number. I'm just going to unmute them and see if there's someone that still had a question for Martin and they want
to
speak up.
Yes.
Okay. And what's your name, please, and what's the question?
It's Stephen Lewis. No, it's David Guthrow. and my question is that, you know, what are some of the topics that drive you crazy? Like, I get a lot of speakers coming to me that want to be speakers, and they say, I speak on this. Are there things that you would just say, you know what? Give it a rest. There's like 40,000 people. It's old. A new spin isn't going to help.
Mm-hmm. You were cutting out a little bit, but I think I heard the question. In terms of topics, you know, I always tell people, speak about what you're passionate about. To me, you know, it doesn't matter if there's 1,000 other people speaking about the topic. If you are really passionate about it and you really believe you have a point of view on that topic that is important and needs to get out, the world can always use one more person on that topic if you actually have something unique to offer. I really think that's the most important consideration, not necessarily, you know, looking at the market and going, well, who are my competitors? Oh, there's too many other people already speaking on that topic. I really think that if you need to be 100% passionate and committed about the topic and really believe that what you have is something you need to offer. And if you do, it's not necessarily going to be easy, but, over time, hopefully the message will get out and people will hear it and realize you have something else to say. And I mean, you look at any given topic and there's Hugh, if you take the things you speak about, you know, there's other people who do it, but you do it differently. And so, there's enough room in the marketplace for you and other people as well. So I really believe that that's the most important thing is just, you know, absolutely, it's not easy. And so if you don't 100% believe in what you have to say is needs to get out, then and eventually you'll give up. But if you do believe that the world needs to hear it, then you'll somehow stick with it and persevere and get the message out eventually.
Nice.
That's
yeah.
Great, Mark. And I apologize for the signal. I'm actually on Skype in the mountains at Whistler, so it's been cutting in and cutting out. And the last.
Well, now you should definitely apologize because I'm sitting in an office in gloomy Toronto, so now I'm really upset.
Oh. Well, so then, do you have a sister, Paula? That's my last question.
Do I have a sister, Paula? No, I don't. Not that I know of, anyway. Not that I know of, yeah.
Insignificant question. Thanks very much. That was fabulous, Martin.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, David. Enjoy Whistler. Okay, well, we have run out of time, and I think, fortunately, I think I actually got all these little balloons. It's like some kind of Pac-Man I'm playing here. I've got to click these balloons, and I have to unmute stuff. Martin, hey, first of all, thank you so much. I know, not only are you a really bright guy who has lots of great insights into this industry, having carved your own niche into it from absolutely nothing, you're also a busy guy. And I really appreciate you taking an hour out of your day to talk to us, to talk to the CAPS members. So thanks for that.
I'm happy to do it. I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to do it again anytime. So just let me know.
That's great. Thanks, Martin. And I know I've got 3 pages of notes here. So selfishly, I have tons of ideas. And thanks to all the callers that called in too, because I think that's also got some great conversations going. Just a couple of quick closing thoughts. Again, if you go and log into the new CAPS website, CanadianSpeakers.org, at the bottom left-hand corner, you'll see archives to Rebecca Morgan, Linda Edgecombe, and Rhonda Victor, Michael Katz, Todd Maffin. We had Ford Sakes, David Newman, so lots of people that have Jane Atkinson, Terry Brock, that have volunteered their time over the last 2 years. So go in there, take advantage of those archives. You can download them. You can go out there and walk your dog and listen to some great information that these other people have also volunteered. And, of course, Martin's recording will be there as soon as we can get it there, and that's for all the folks that couldn't make the call. Last thing I want to mention is that I'll be interviewing Clint Greenleaf on November the 3rd, same time of day, November the 3rd, and he is the founder and CEO of Greenleaf Books, of course, and a lot of you that have been to the NSA meetings and maybe some of the CAPS conventions as well. You would have seen Clint wandering around. Great guy, very successful, built again out of nothing like Martin and his garage, a very successful New York Times bestseller book publishing company where he really has made his mark in the industry. He's worked on over 1,000 titles, so I'm going to be really excited to learn all about the inside scoop on how to make a bestseller. And, you know, if it's not a bestseller, how to make something that actually sells great from the back of the room. So that's on November the 3rd, so please make sure you get registered for that. By going onto the website and then scrolling down to the bottom to events and then click on Clint's face. So click on Clint's face and then register. Again, thanks a lot, Martin, for being on the call
today.
Thanks,
too. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, have a great day. Take care.
Bye-bye.